everybody, and welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we are going to be talking about Season 6, Episode 2, Two and a Half Men, written by Adam Glass and directed by John Showalter. Just a little aside to say, this is the first episode I've recorded in more than a month. My little hiatus went on far longer than I was expecting it to, and I am just finally beginning to get caught back up with real life stuff. Finally finished editing the previous episode that posted last week, and this one is now going to be ready to go by the time you're all listening to it, obviously. But thank you for bearing with me and giving me a little bit of space to take care of family stuff. Hopefully everything should continue smoothly now. With that, let's get right on to it. From the djinn in last week's episode, which are usually used in Supernatural to highlight Dean's identity issues, since 220, what is and what should never be, to shapeshifters in this week's episode, which are, again, typically brought out to highlight Dean's identity issues going all the way back to 1-6 skin, we're really making Season 6 all about Dean and his identity issues, aren't we? We're going to poke hard at the mask of performing Dean, and Soulless Sam is going to provide an interesting lever to give us a peek beneath it. Because we still don't know what's wrong with Sam yet, but I mean, we know what's wrong with Sam. Meanwhile, we get some more glaring neon signs that something is super fishy with Sam, and Dean realizes he can't stay with Lisa and Ben. And on that note, let's dive right into the guilt and turmoil that this episode churns up. There's only a few linked things for this episode, the Super Wiki page. My tag is super short. The main things in there are a couple of rewatch posts from the past and the filming locations map. And aside from that, there's not a lot of other content to go with this one, which I kind of get. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward Monster of the Week episode where we, the viewers, don't really have a lot of information on what's actually going on yet this season, as it aired anyway, but now we do. So we will try and look at it in that context, beginning right at the then segment. Let's just all collectively hope that I remember how to do all of this after a month of not doing it. We begin with Sam revealing himself to Dean at the beginning of the last episode and Dean hugging him, and overlaying that is some spooky, creepy, mystery music that is not the, oh, dramatic brothers reunited moment, but suspicion overlaid over it. And Dean asking Sam how long he's been back, and Sam admitting a year. Dean angry at Sam, justifiably, for not even having told him he's been back. Sam insisting that Dean finally had what he wanted, as the spooky suspicion music continues. As it switches over to Bobby angrily telling Dean, "You got out, Dean!" There's an additional, like, anger chord laid over the suspicion music, as Sam tells Dean that he's hooked up with some other hunters, more like family. The anger and suspicion chords blend into dramatic in a noir film. It'd be like the trumpets of danger warning. After we're reintroduced to Samuel and the fact that he is now alive again, we are reminded of shapeshifters, with one from Night Shifter with the laser eyes. And then at the end of last episode, when Sam wanted Dean to come back with him to continue hunting, Dean insisted he was going back to Lisa and Ben, and Sam's like, you're going to put them in danger. And Dean's like, well, I already did put them in danger. I can't leave them unprotected. And that's how the episode ended. And that's how this one begins. As we come to now, we begin in a happy couple's home who have a new baby, according to the pictures on their fireplace mantle. And then we see the mother race into screen with blood all over her hands, clutching her baby and running from something that's invaded her home, trying to call for help, but the phones are dead. She's locked in her bedroom. She tries to hide under the bed with the baby, trying to keep it from making any sound. But across the room, she can see the body of her husband bloodied on the floor and is terrified as something stalks them from outside the door of her bedroom. She thinks that they are safe, that whatever it is or whoever it is went away. And just as she begins to relax, something pulls her by her feet out from under the bed, and she screams off screen as we focus in on the baby, just happily lying there, and then we cut to the title card. We then cut to the exterior of a cute little house with a for rent sign and a sign over that that says rented. Inside the house, there's boxes and plastic wrap and Dean. He and Lisa have apparently moved their entire lives again. And as he unpacks in the garage, he lifts the trunk on baby and looks through his weapons cache, occasionally glancing around like hopefully nobody's watching him do this, looking sort of longingly at the cache. But he puts it all back, slams the trunk, locks it, drops the keys in a toolbox, and covers baby back up with a tarp. That's not his life anymore. Instead, he picks up a box labeled kitchen and takes it into the house, where his family is doing their best to settle in a circumstance that, you know, here we are moving again. Ben looks extremely bored, like he doesn't want to have to settle into a new life and a new neighborhood with new friends and a new school and new everything. Lisa tells him to at least check it out, you know, keep an open mind, maybe you'll actually like it. So Ben takes the initiative. He's about to get on his bike and go outside for a ride around the block. And Dean's like, whoa, and let your mom unpack the kitchen by yourself? You could tell there's an undercurrent here of Dean doesn't want Ben alone outside where he's vulnerable and Dean can't see and protect him. That's the level of overprotectiveness Dean has now achieved, which is borderline John levels of obsession over safety. Lisa tries to soften the blow of Dean's bizarrely controlling comment with, oh, we'll go out for lunch later and scope out the neighborhood. Dean agrees that that sounds like a plan. Meanwhile, back at the house of the woman we saw from the cold open in Lansing, Michigan, Sam is posing as a fed, asking questions about the case. Apparently, the baby was taken after the parents were both killed. Back at Dean's house, the doorbell rings and Dean answers it. He'd gone ahead and ordered pizza for them all. He pays for it, turns around, and finds Ben and Lisa both standing there, staring at him like, what the hell? We agreed we were going to go out for lunch, and you just go ahead and order pizza in? Are we never allowed to leave the house again? Dean tries to brush it off as, oh, I forgot. But as soon as Ben and Lisa turn away, he has got the look of guilt on his face. He knows he's done something completely overbearing here. Sam leaves the house, no EMF, no sulfur, and he's on the phone with Samuel, who is apparently incapable of operating a computer, gives up and slams it, but tells Sam four babies taken from four sets of murdered couples in the same part of the state in just a few days. That's got to be at least something their kind of thing. And we get our first hint from Samuel that he might not think Sam is altogether there. He's like, what, am I boring you? You got someplace better to be? Like, why are you trying not to investigate the missing babies? This is obviously, even if it's not a supernatural case, this is still a terrible thing that our efforts should be used to try and at least help figure out. And Sam is just completely nonplussed. Normally, normal Sam that we all know and love would be freaking out if babies were going missing. You know what I mean? But Samuel says, sometimes I wonder about you, Sam. And Sam replies, sometimes I wonder about me too. Like, he recalls a time somewhere buried deep in his memories where he remembers caring about stuff like this, and he just doesn't now. The curse of being soulless. As Sam's about to hang up with Samuel, he notices a sign in the front lawn and remembers that the police told him that the alarm system never went off before this couple was murdered. And he wants Samuel to look into whether any of the other couples had a security system from the same company. Back at Dean's, he comes into the garage carrying a big armload of empty boxes and notices Ben at the trunk of the Impala with it open and the secret panel open. And Ben is holding the same shotgun that Dean was checking at the beginning of this episode. And Dean flips out. So in order to do this, Ben had to lift the tarp, know where the keys were, unlock the trunk, know how to prop up the secret compartment in the trunk, and remove the gun. He could have killed himself. He has absolutely no training in weapons. He doesn't know what half the stuff in the trunk even does. And there's stuff in there that is definitely not for playtime. Grenade launcher, anyone? Ben's like, oh, I was just playing. I was just checking it out. Dean's like, very seriously, don't ever open this trunk. And Ben's like, but I don't get it. You owned a rifle when you were my age. Why can't I, kind of? Dean is adamant that Ben will never, ever shoot a gun. And I need everybody to remember that like 20 episodes from now when Dean demands that Ben shoot a gun to save all of their lives from demons. And it's a situation that sort of breaks Dean. He never wants Ben to have to remember having shot a gun. He never wants Ben to be what he was forced to become. He doesn't want Ben to follow in his footsteps. He wants Ben to be normal. Ben first starts on the tack of, you think something's coming for us? And Dean's like, no, I don't think anything's coming for us. Well, then why'd you move to a totally new place? You know? And Ben's like, but I could do what you do. And Dean is like, oh, no, that is not happening. Ben is very eagerly asking to be taught how to shoot a gun. And Dean's like, shut up about the freaking guns. This is a hard line in the sand for Dean because of how he was raised, of what John made him into. And here's Ben wanting that for himself because he looks up to Dean and he wants to be just like Dean. And he never was forced into it. It's almost like what Dean went through with Sam. Think back to when Sam first found out about the monsters and the hunting. And he was like, tell me about it, Dean. I want to be part of the family business. I want to know everything. And he felt left out that he wasn't included in the monster talk and the hunting and everything. And Dean's like, tried to do everything to protect Sam from it. But it comes a point where you can't because it's your life. And you're still living in it. And he's doing everything in his power to keep Ben away from it. But that outburst finally gets Ben to back off. And Dean feels like shit about it. Because he didn't want to yell at Ben for this. He didn't want to have to tell Ben no about this. And the gears begin turning in Dean's head. I've done this to them. I can't take this back. I tried to not be my father to these people. But that is exactly what I am becoming by staying with them. He may not be forcing Ben to learn how to hunt, shoot a gun, and protect his brother, and whatever else that Dean was forced to do. But it's the control, the level of paranoia he has achieved in trying to protect these people. Meanwhile, back to Sam. He's sitting on a little park bench, reading through files, when Samuel calls him back and confirms that yes, every couple that was murdered had the same security company. But because they know the pattern now, they're looking for other potential victims of this killer. Happy couples with a young baby, 6-month-old baby, and this couple still alive. Maybe they can get there in time to save them or catch whatever it is that's doing these killings. And 6-month-old babies being attacked and their parents murdered? Ringing any bells for you, Sam? Even if he already knows it's not a demon doing the killing this time, it's still an interesting pattern. Back at the garage at Dean's new house, he's still tidying things away when Lisa comes in and is like, so what happened? Ben's been locked in his room for hours and said you yelled at him. Dean tries to brush it off as nothing. Ben got into his tools and he shouldn't have gotten so mad. And Lisa already looks like she knows what's going on and was just waiting for the other shoe to drop. But Lisa has also kind of had enough of this. She's like, so are we not allowed to leave the house again? And Dean's like, I'm just trying to keep everybody safe. And Lisa's like, I get that, but you said you and your brother killed the things that were after us. And then we even moved just to be sure we were safe. When does it end? You know, she's like, I trust you because you're the expert at these things, but there's got to be a limit here. When can we have our normal lives back? She's just asking Dean if there is some specific threat against them, some specific monster, or just monsters in general. And Dean's like, well, I can't predict what's going to come after me. And Lisa's like, well, let's just set up some parameters then, because we have to continue to live our lives. And then Lisa tells him that she understands he wants to protect them, but he's also scaring her. Just throw another log on the bonfire of Dean's regrets. Later that night, Sam is staking out the house of the couple that they believe could be the next target of the killer. He breaks into the house, like, not even a qualm about it, not even an attempt to knock on the door first. He's clearly too late anyway, because the couple's lying murdered in their living room. Sam follows a trail of bloody footprints down a hallway and is surprised and taken off guard by a guy wearing a Harper Kane security uniform, the alarm company. Sam drops his gun, but he grabs a silver knife from his belt and slashes at the guy, and it steams and smokes, and the wound doesn't immediately heal. And now that he's been stunned, the shapeshifter runs away, leaving Sam in the house to discover the baby has survived. It's still alive. Which means Sam's got a problem. He's got to figure out how to take care of a baby. So he calls Dean for help. And I'd just like to point out how wildly funny it is that Sam didn't think to call any of the other Campbells that he'd been working with for a year. Not even Gwen, the woman who's supposed to be, you know, because of her gender, should be like, at least have a motherly instinct, according to somebody who might be soulless and calculating like that. But no, he doesn't think that any of those people have any sort of ability to care for an infant. So he calls Dean. Dean tries to tell Sam no, he's out, he doesn't want to be pulled back into hunting, he's done. And Sam's like, no, I'm 30 minutes away from you, I will drive to your door if you don't meet me, this is urgent. Dean's like, what's so urgent? And then his eyes go wide. We don't hear what Sam's telling him, but we know about the baby, about the shapeshifter, the murdered people. And so Dean drives out and meets him by some deserted field. The next morning, back at Dean's house, he's making sure Lisa knows how to operate a handgun, because he's going to have to leave her and Ben to go out and help Sam take care of this baby and finish his hunt. He can just never escape, can he? She proves she is proficient at assembling and disassembling and operating the safety on the gun. And Dean's like, and salt the windows and the doors. And she's like, of course. And he's like, maybe I shouldn't go. And she's like, just go. You're obviously needed. Dean tries to hedge again, like, oh, Sam can handle this. Lisa tells him, if you don't walk out that door, I'm going to shoot you. Like, she knows Dean is antsy pantsy. He needs to get out and hunt something. And I think she's beginning to realize that about him as a person. He needs this because it's who he is. It's what he does. And I think she needs him to not obsess about her and Ben and to understand that he can leave and take his eyes off them and nothing will happen to them. Dean grabs up his gear, kisses Lisa goodbye, and then goes off to meet Sam. He just moves his gear into Sam's car while getting all the facts that Sam has about the case so far. It ran when he cut it with silver, which means it could be a ghoul or a shifter or a dozen other things. But none of those things are known for kidnapping babies either. So they really have not figured this one out yet, even though we know it's shapeshifters because we know how television works. We've seen the episode before and we saw the cold open where they were talking about shapeshifters. The baby looks cute, smiling at Dean from the back seat at least. Sam goes to start his car, and the car is making the annoying beeping noise that modern cars make when you haven't buckled the seatbelt, and he demands Dean buckle his seatbelt. Dean's like, what am I, in third grade? Because the Impala doesn't even have seatbelts. So, it's not something he's used to having to do. Even his older truck probably doesn't do that. Dean looks at Sam and says, we need to get some supplies, and Sam kind of like snarks at him, oh, I've got an arsenal in the trunk. Dean's like, yeah, not that kind. They go to the grocery store because they need baby food and diapers and all the other things a baby needs. They walk around the store. Dean is picking out diaper cream and diapers and wipes. And Sam's like, so how do you know all this stuff? And Dean immediately comes up with the excuse that Lisa's got a baby niece, so he's been on a few milk runs for supplies. But Dean also took care of Sam as a baby. He's been doing this his whole life. This is like second nature to him. Does anyone really think that John did the majority of baby care? But as they're shopping, the baby starts to tune up like he's gonna have a tantrum, because he's a baby and that's what they do. They hurry to get done, but the baby starts crying in the checkout lane. The baby's full on sobbing, and Sam's like, Dean, make it stop. And Dean's like, how? How do I do that? I mean, first of all, you could try picking him up and holding him instead of just leaving him in the shopping cart seat. That would probably help. Finally, Dean just picks the baby up and holds him out at arm's length. The baby's crying and Dean's just crying back at it, like, nah. And then an older woman comes behind them in line and is like, oh, what's the matter? What's his name? And Dean kind of regards her slightly suspiciously. But Dean answers that the baby's name is Bobby at the same moment that Sam answers that the baby's name is John. And then Dean clarifies it's Bobby John. And I think it's unusual and interesting to note the two of them each picked a father figure to name this child after. And Dean picked Bobby. Sam picked John. And I don't think Sam in any other known universe, if he wasn't soulless, would have picked John. The woman offers to hold Bobby John and confirms that the baby needs a diaper change. She's very friendly and offers to change Bobby John's diaper for them because Sam and Dean look exhausted. And just being held properly, the baby has stopped crying. Dean glances around, still looking slightly uncomfortable at the scene that they had made, and notices on the security cameras behind him, the woman's eyes are glowing. He knows exactly what kind of monster she is. Shapeshifter. And his demeanor immediately goes from friendly and overwhelmed, trying not to draw too much attention, failing, to give me the baby before I stab you in the neck. Sam is appalled. He's like, Dean, you're like, how dare you talk to somebody like that? Dean just hooks a thumb over his shoulder at the security monitors, and Sam sees why. And then she makes a break for it, runs off with the baby. And honestly, if Dean just hadn't lost his cool there and just was like, that's fine, I'll take the baby back, he probably could have gotten the baby back from her, because she doesn't want to make a scene because baby shapeshifter she's trying to steal back. But no, he had to threaten her. So of course she bolts for it. But being a cute little old lady, everyone else around believes her over the two scary looking guys who are apparently trying to attack her and steal the baby. As Dean grabs her arm though, shapeshifter, her big chunk of her skin peels off and another couple in the store is like, oh God. Sam manages to head her off and grab the baby from her. Dean tackles her and then whips out a knife. Like they aren't exactly in the middle of the public eye here, surrounded by witnesses. And it just looks like Dean's a crazy man who's trying to murder her, which, I mean, he is. But nobody else knows that this is a shapeshifting monster who had already killed a number of other people. And he was just trying to end the threat to everybody. Store manager pulls Dean off of her, and Dean raises his hands and puts his knife away and is like, okay, all right. And then he makes a run for it. The shapeshifter makes it outside just in time to see them peeling off and catches Sam's license plate number. They decide they have to get off the road, find someplace safe to hole up with the baby until they figure out what they're doing, because the shapeshifter could have been following Sam this entire time. And then we cut to a police officer calling in the license plates from Sam's car to put an APB on it. And it pans over to the passenger seat where the exact same police officer has his throat slashed and his uniform stolen. Continues panning down to the ground to reveal a pile of goo and the clothes that the little old lady from the grocery store had been wearing. It's our shapeshifter. Sam and Dean have found a motel. where Dean is finally changing Bobby John's diaper and complaining about it the entire time, but still doing a perfectly wonderful job of picks up the baby and then starts humming Smoke on the Water, trying to comfort Bobby John into taking a nap. Sam just laughs at this. He tells Dean he's just going to make it cranky again if he keeps humming like that. And Dean's like, shh, he's going to sleep. Dean finally does put him down and the baby is perfectly content to lie in a little crib. And Sam is like, what the hell? How'd you become the baby whisperer? Sam tells Dean that he's kind of surprised by this, that he's father material. And Dean's like, well, I've kind of had to be lately, right? Sink or swim with Ben. And it's like, Dean, there's a vast gulf between taking care of a teenager and taking care of an infant. You've got skills with babies. And Sam has no concept of the fact that Dean used to care for him as an infant. Dean starts opening up to Sam because who could understand their lives better than Sam? He tells Sam that Ben might not be his kid, but he could do something different with Ben than what they experienced growing up. He doesn't have to do that to Ben. Sam's like, are you sure about that? You're moving them around. You're keeping them on lockdown. Dean looks like he's about to protest that. And Sam's like, you do have them on lockdown, don't you? And Dean walks away like, oh, God, I don't want to hear this. But Sam, rightfully here, for the soulless guy, he's got this incredibly precise argument here that is the literal truth. How is what you're doing to Ben and Lisa any different than how we grew up? It's exactly how we were raised. Hauled around, put in lockdown, kept away from society. Like, you're doing the exact same thing to Ben and Lisa. Dean sits down on the edge of the bed with his glass of whiskey and is like, I'm not forcing anybody to live in this life. This is temporary. And Sam laughs. It's never temporary. That's what Dad always said. And that was a total lie. Don't lie to yourself, Dean. Sam basically tells Dean that he's going to turn into their dad no matter what he does if he tries to stay there with Ben and Lisa. And goes right back to perusing his notes and case files. And a moment later is like, oh, crap, how did I miss this? One of the fathers wasn't living at home at the time that his wife was murdered and their baby was stolen. He's still alive. We can go question him. Sam asks if Dean wants to come, and Dean hears the baby making a little noise and is like, you go, I'll stay with the baby. Unless you've got a little badge for Bobby John, yeah, go. As Sam leaves, Dean dips his finger down in the whiskey and rubs it in a crying Bobby John's mouth. And I just have to say that he's not giving the baby alcohol. When I was a kid and when Dean was a kid, because it was around the same time, that was considered standard practice. Literally, my pediatrician told my mother when I was having teething pain as an infant in the early 70s. To rub whiskey or brandy on the baby's gums because it's soothing. It's long been debunked as a good thing to do. You don't do that anymore. But Dean would have remembered probably John telling him to do that for Sammy, because that was just what people did back then. And if anything is a throwback to the fact that Dean has known this infant care stuff since he was a toddler himself, that's it for me. That's not something he would pick up from a modern parent. Parenting an infant in the 2010s, that just wasn't done then. I mean, not even when my baby was a baby in 2000 would we do that. So this is definitely a throwback for him. He's known this his whole life. Over at the garage where the husband of one of the murdered women works, His name is Jimmy. Sam is trying to figure out why he wasn't at home, why, you know, he and his wife had separated and they'd filed for divorce. He says he caught his wife cheating on him. He didn't catch her in the act, but they hadn't been together in a while. And then suddenly she's coming up pregnant and insisting that the baby was his. And the math just does not work out for him. She claimed it was his because he went out of town and then came back early and they had a romantic encounter. And he's like, no, I didn't come back early and we didn't have sex. Back in the motel room, Bobby John is comfortably lying in his crib and Dean is taking a few minutes to enjoy the magic fingers on his bed. All seems peaceful until there's a sudden explodey splatty noise and the baby starts crying. And Dean bolts upright to see proof that this is a baby shapeshifter. Sam calls as Dean is investigating what has happened with the baby and tells Dean that I think the shapeshifter might be its dad. And Dean picks up the baby and it's now black. And he's like, yeah, you think? But the poor infant has just had this horrifically traumatic experience that might be the first time it's ever shapeshifted. Maybe that's why the father was trying to get it back before it was 6 months old. Maybe that's when the shapeshifting starts. Because that's the sort of thing that new parents would notice if their baby suddenly exploded goo and completely changed identity. Dean is attempting to comfort this poor, shocked child. And there's a knock on the door. It's apparently the motel manager who has had some complaints about the noise. Dean tries to make an excuse. Yeah, sorry, just got out of the shower. It's not a good time. The manager insists that he open the door. Dean refuses, says, I'm getting it under control. Sorry about that. And then somebody tries the doorknob. Dean realizes this is way more persistent than a motel manager would ever be. Dean puts the baby down in the crib, goes and stands by the door and hides and waits because the shapeshifter has arrived and is picking the lock. As soon as he's inside, we see it's the police officer version of the shapeshifter. Dean charges and attacks him. The cop then says to Dean, get out of the way. The child needs to be with his father. And Dean's like, well, I'm not seeing the family resemblance. Ha ha ha. The man actually says, I'm not just talking about me. I'm talking about our father. So he's not actually the father of this baby shapeshifter. And this guy's just a lackey going to pick up the laundry or whatever. Kind of weird thing to even mention to a hunter. I mean, he clearly thinks he's going to kill this hunter and make it not a problem anymore, but he obviously doesn't know the Winchesters. Dean gets a slash in on the guy's cheek before the shapeshifter throws him across the room, and Dean thinks, okay, well, that's it, because he starts going for the baby when the cop is just shot through the heart from behind. Sam has arrived back and killed the shifter. But obviously now they can't stay in this motel room with a dead sheriff and a blood pool and the grody splatter from the baby having shifted. They gotta flee again. Where to now? As they're driving away, Sam's marveling at what an efficient setup that is. Shapeshifter who works for the alarm company knows when the father is going to be out of town or away or something. Goes and pretends to be the father. Gets the mother pregnant, comes back in 9 months and collects the baby. They're both marveling at the fact that apparently monsters have monster babies. They never knew that this was even a thing before. They just assumed they were genetic abnormalities that just happened. Apparently not. They reproduce. Sam's like, I've never seen a baby monster before. And Dean's like, well, you know, it is still just a baby. And Sam's like, well, it's still a shifter. Like, Dean's like, it can't help that. It can't help who it's parents are. We still have to take care of it. It's not like we can just drop it off at an orphanage. They'd get upset when all of a sudden it just exploded again. Sam's immediate answer is to take it to Samuel, that he will know what to do with it. And Dean's like, you want to take it to a bunch of hunters? We don't even know them. And Sam's like, well, I do. Not every hunter is a head case. Samuel's a lot like you. And Dean's like, I'm a head case. And I would like to beg to differ that Samuel is anything like Dean. But since Dean has no other better ideas, they go to the Campbell family compound with it. At the Campbell compound, behind barbed wire fencing and surrounded by armed guards and broody-looking hunters, Dean's holding the baby, just getting stared at by everybody. Gwen walks over and touches the baby in Dean's arms and, smiling, just says, aren't you the best disguise a monster ever wore? And laughs, and Dean just looks at her like, what a terrible thing to say, it's just an innocent baby. Samuel walks out with Sam and is like, I think I've got some ideas. He walks over to Dean and he asks to hold the baby. And Dean's like, yeah, I don't think so. Samuel's like, what do you think I'm going to do? Dean's like, you don't want me to answer that question. Like, he does not trust Samuel at all with this baby. Christian pipes up from across the room. Who exactly do you think we are? Dean looks at him and is like, hunters. He doesn't trust hunters with a monster baby, even if it's just an innocent child to Dean. And Christian's like, well, here I was thinking we were family. Sam tells Dean it's okay, and he takes the baby, and Sam hands it directly to Samuel, who does the whole, I'm a grandpa, I know how to take care of babies thing. But Samuel immediately reminds Dean of who he is. He's like, I haven't held one of these in a long time. Your mom was the tiniest and bald as a cue ball. And that puts Dean slightly at ease, remembering that, yeah, he did successfully raise a human being to adulthood. Dean's like, okay, so what are we going to do with him? And Samuel's just like, we're going to raise him. But Dean is suspicious of their motives. What, are you going to poke at him? Study him? What? What do hunters do with a monster child? And Christian pipes up again. Your mind goes directly to torture, but don't assume that of everybody else. Christian informs Dean that he knows what Dean majored in hell, that he was a torturer. And it's like, well, how did you even know about that? Who did Sam tell you that? I don't think that's something Sam would have just volunteered. How do you know that, Christian? Sam tells Christian to back off. Samuel informs Dean that they are going to let the kid grow up. And then if he chooses, whatever life he chooses will be his own. Somebody else pipes up, think of the kind of hunter he could grow up to be with his special skill set. Dean demands that Samuel give him back the baby. He thinks they're crazy for wanting to raise it as a hunter. He just is entirely suspicious of all of them, including Sam and Samuel. It's just too convenient that they're both back from the dead all of a sudden, and nobody else seems to be concerned about that. Sam insists that, yeah, we are concerned about that. And Samuel wants Dean to show him even the slightest bit of trust. Dean is not going to do that. I mean, think about what he's facing in his regular life. Lisa and Ben, who he's trying not to turn into his father over their care. And now he's faced with this other monstrous baby whose care he is suddenly responsible for as well. How do you justify keeping one out of hunting and forcing another into it? Samuel reaffirms to Dean that all they're trying to do is invite him in to be part of this family, to be part of this hunting crew, and then calls out to Christian and is like, you and Arlene, you're still trying for a baby? Then basically just hands the baby over to Christian to raise as his own. Dean is appalled by this, that everybody else is just fine with Christian taking this baby. Dean's like, you have no business raising anything. And Sam's like, why? Because he's a hunter? Like, maybe the way we were raised isn't the only way. And what you're doing to Lisa and Ben, maybe that's not the only way either. But there's no time to debate it any longer. One of the guard dogs outside is losing its little mind. Samuel gives the baby back to Dean and sends him back to the panic room where he'll be safe, supposedly. Dean and Sam take the baby and go into hiding while every other hunter on the premises grabs weapons and prepares for the monster about to attack. Comes barging through the door and it looks exactly like Samuel. Where on earth did this monster get Samuel's DNA already? Gwen shoots shapeshifter Samuel twice in the back with his shotgun, and it does absolutely nothing. The other hunter, the one whose name I don't remember catching, he runs up and stabs the shapeshifter in the heart with a silver blade, which also does nothing. He tells everybody else to run just as the shapeshifter snaps his neck. Samuel hits him with a couple of, I suppose, tranquilizer darts, which do nothing. Christian hits him with a couple more. Still doesn't go down. But at least he's released Gwen and finally drops to his knees. Samuel tells Christian to go get the silver nets and we'll box him up. Because we don't know exactly what they're doing with all of these monsters that they're capturing. Because we know they captured the djinn in the last episode with the bag on its head. Why are they doing that? Why are they keeping it secret? And now they're doing it to a shapeshifter? But before Christian can come back with the gear, the shifter gets back to his feet and ejects the massive tranquilizer darts from his back just by flexing his muscles. And neither Samuel, Christian, nor Gwen have ever seen anything like this. Meanwhile, in the panic room, Dean is trying to keep the baby calm. They can hear fighting upstairs. And Sam's like, okay, well, you stay with the baby. I'm going to go up and try and help. Looks through the little porthole on the door of the panic room and sees his own face. The shifter now looks like Sam. This is some talented shifter. And so much for the panic room being secure, he just rips the door off the hinges and throws it aside like it was nothing. Sam tries to attack, and the shifter just flings him aside and then closes in on Dean and the baby, because that's what he really wants. Without even shedding its skin, the shapeshifter sort of ripples and turns into Dean. It's like he doesn't even need to touch the person that he is going to shift into. He just does it. Dean still refuses to hand over the baby, so the shifter slides him up the wall by his throat until Dean starts to pass out and then just takes the baby. Samuel and Sam are talking at one side of the room as they're all recovering from this attack, and he says, well, I guess it's not a myth now. Dean's like, what the hell is that thing? And Samuel's like, well, I think we might be dealing with an alpha. That it may be the first original shapeshifter that has spawned all of the others. Tells Dean there's tons of lore about it. Not lore that any of them have ever heard, obviously. Which begs the question again, where is Samuel getting all of this information? Especially because we know what his assignment upon his resurrection was. To seek out the alpha monsters for Crowley. How much information did Crowley arm him with in order to be able to carry out this mission, you know? Sam reminds Dean that that's why it was so strong and nothing we had could stop it. Silver knife, shotguns, nothing stopped it. And Samuel explains that in the lore, it would always be able to sense its baby and find it. Dean then asks the obvious question, how do we kill it? And Samuel admits that he's not sure that they can kill the alpha. Dean and Sam go for a walk outside, and Dean's like, oh, that makes sense now. What the shifter back at the hotel said about their father. And Dean questions Sam, did you hear him say that? Like, how much of this lore were you in on too, Sam? If Samuel knows all of this and was kind of expecting it, did you know this? Did you hear that other shapeshifter back at the motel before you shot it say that word about its father too? Did you hear that, Sam? And Sam's like, freezes for a second. Like, I don't know. It was kind of a hot moment. He doesn't even say, no, I didn't hear it. Like, it must have been right before I got there. He doesn't make any excuse. He's just not a good liar, even soulless. But Dean's suspicious of Sam's motives. You know, he's been hanging out with these Campbells for a year. What is he up to? Dean's like, well, because if you heard him, then you knew about the Alpha. And if you knew about the Alpha, you knew he was going to come after the baby. And this is where you chose to bring him. Like you were luring him into a trap and not telling me about any of it. Dean accuses Sam of trying to use the baby as bait. And Sam laughs it off. He's like, of course not. I just thought Samuel's would be the safest place to bring it. But for Dean, when it comes to Sam, there's just way too much that's just not adding up. That seems just slightly off. Or maybe more than slightly off. Sam and Dean leave the compound. But back inside the compound, Samuel is on the phone with someone saying, no, I didn't catch it. We filled it full of elephant tranquilizer and it giggled. Like, it's not something that we have the power to subdue. But Samuel insists that, yes, we will find a way to catch it. Not kill it, catch it. And we now know that it's probably Crowley on the other end of the line that Samuel is working with, catching alphas for him. But now it's just a little moment of suspicion about his motives. Back at Dean and Lisa's house, Dean's finally home, and he looks even more shell-shocked than when he left. He asks where Ben is, and Lisa casually tells him, bike ride. Like, yeah, we've just been living normal lives since you left. Don't worry about it. We're fine. But Dean is having a crisis. He would do whatever the safest thing was, either stay here with you guys forever or get as far away from you and never come back. But he doesn't know which thing will actually protect them. Dean confesses to her that he's turning into something he does not want to be. He never wanted to become his father like this. But it's exactly how his dad was, and he can't take becoming that. Lisa tells him she's going to be honest with him. She knows he's not a construction worker. He's a hunter. He doesn't want to be there with her. And he tells her, yes, I do. And yeah, in a way, he kind of does. But she's like, you also want to be there. You want to be with your brother, hunting. Lisa tells him, and she might be the first one who ever did, you think you're this bad, awful person, but you're not. It's like the very mildest version of the, you know, I love the world because you did. But obviously it's at a much milder degree here. She can tell that Dean is a good person through and through. She's just like, but I'm not going to have this conversation every time you leave. I'm not going to deal with you going through this crisis of what should I be doing? What's the right thing to do every time he feels compelled to go out and hunt something? He doesn't want that suburban life where he just holds a 9-to-5, you know? She knows that that's not for him, that he's torn and conflicted because he wants to go out there and hunt. That's who he is. And it's not a bad thing. She tells Dean that he has to go. And Dean's like, oh, great. Yeah. So I get to hit the road and I'm, you know, I don't want to lose you and Ben. And she's like, nobody said you had to. You go, you do your thing. And when you can, you come back here and visit. You spend time with us. But don't feel compelled to stay here when your heart is out there. Dean's kind of shocked. He's like, do you think we could really pull something like that off? And she's like, well, it's worth a shot, isn't it? It is worth a shot, even if it's not going to work out because monsters are still following you around because of the life you lead and being the main character and all that, having main character syndrome. And for the very first time all season, Dean actually looks happy about something as Smoke on the Water plays and he whips the tarp off Baby. His car has been freed. He no longer has to wear the disguise of friendly neighborhood construction worker. He gets to be who he is. And the final shot of the episode, as we hear Baby's engines revving, is just Dean standing there smiling down at her. Like he's so glad that he's finally home. And I think that says everything you need to know about how Dean feels about hunting, how he feels about his life that he's chosen, and what it says about how he feels about that entire year that he felt obligated to stay with Lisa. I am just routinely baffled by folks who are all like, oh, well, Dean wants the white picket fence apple pie life. And it's like, in what alternate reality does he want that? Because it ain't the show. It ain't canon at all. Yeah, he wants to do the toes in the sand, take a vacation, maybe retire from hunting or partially retire from hunting or at least take a vacation by the end of the series. But I don't know that he'd ever want to be totally out of it. We've earned a break, not we've earned freedom from having to do that, because it's all he's known since he was 4 years old. It's who he is. And just telling him, no, you're not going to do that anymore. Like, I can't even read canon fic where he wants to be away from it. It just makes no sense to me, to who he is, you know? It's like core to who he is as a person. So, yeah, I really just don't see him wanting to give that up, ever. Not completely. Vacation's a different story. But he just looks so happy to be back in his car. And yet he's still very suspicious of Sam, and it's not like he's immediately jumped back into wanting to go hunting with Sam straight away. But he's got his freedom. He's been relieved of the burden of responsibility for Ben and Lisa's lives. He's absolved of having to take care of them constantly, of the burden of his fear of becoming his father and controlling their lives. He doesn't mind being responsible for humanity as a whole. He just doesn't want to be responsible for individuals who can't be responsible for themselves when it comes to monsters and hunting. There you go. He needs someone in the life. Someone who understands. Someone who'd ride shotgun with him. We all know who that is. Anyway, I won't belabor this one because it is what it is. We know about the alpha hunt. We know that Samuel is working for someone shady. Crowley. We know that Sam knows more than he's probably letting on and is not telling Dean important stuff. He's keeping everything really close to his vest. And there's something seriously wrong with Sam. There's a lot of suspicion to go around. But we'll find out more about some of that and what's up with Cass in next week's episode, Season 6, Episode 3, The Third Man. Who's Cass, who I missed so much, and who has done so dirty this season, and who is also acting fishy and suspicious. So, poor Dean, he is just out in the cold all season long. Until then, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPN George. You can find me on Discord at Mittens hashtag 4865, at least for now. From what I understand, Discord is forcing people to change their handles to some specific new format. So that may not be my handle by the time this airs. Who knows? Or you can email me at mittensmorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. And yeah, last week's episode, I didn't get as much of a chance to thank everybody again as I would have wanted to, because I recorded it long before I had to take my hiatus and then edited it long afterwards. So it's been a while and I'm probably out of shape. My podcasting muscles have gone all flabby, but at least I'm no longer in Florida. I had to go to Florida to help my mom out. So it's the sad reminder that yes, I was born and raised in Florida and luckily escaped there. So condolences to anyone listening to this in Florida. I'm sorry for your situation. Anyway, at least I'm not there anymore. Hopefully things are getting back to normal, and this podcast shall now resume its normal weekly schedule. Have a good one, everyone.